Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
TV, my name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And today I am sitting down and interviewing one of the top dealers in the UK, a performer, a creator, an innovator. He has multiple businesses. He's super successful, really nice guy, a reviewer of magic. This guy does so much. He makes me tired just watching the stuff and the output he comes out with. And everybody speaks so highly of him. I am, of course, talking about the one and only James Anthony. How are you doing, James? You all right?
Very well. How are you?
Good. It's almost Christmas.
Thanks for inviting me onto your show.
Thank you for coming on the show. Seriously, it's I know how busy you are. You just told me off camera how busy you are. We've been trying to organize this for about 3 weeks and your schedule is manic. So thank you for squeezing a little bit of time in with me. I really appreciate it.
No problem at all. I've been looking forward to it. It's nice to do more things like this. I was doing more like this.
I know. And that's one thing that we're going to get into a little bit later on. And when I talk about you being busy, you've got so many different aspects of your business that are taking off in different directions. And you're juggling all these different plates and trying to make sure they're all spinning, you know. And it's I know how difficult that can
be.
You
know what it's like. I've seen your goal list from last week on Facebook. That's a mighty goal list.
I know. It's aspirational, put it that way. Yes. It's very aspirational.
You will achieve it.
I hope so. That's my goal. My goal is to achieve it, but we'll see. I've already kind of got one of them in the bag, so we're a tenth of the way there. I'm gonna be positive.
Brilliant.
But this is not about me. This is about you. Now, for people that don't know who you are, I mean, obviously everybody in the UK knows James Anthony, but there might be people outside of the UK, and there's a big audience, probably over 70% of the people that watch this channel that aren't in the UK that might not have heard about you.
Okay.
So I want to kind of give everyone a bit of a frame of reference. I always do this in my interviews and start off by talking a bit about you, a bit about your background and kind of where you came from. And then we can talk about all about what you're doing right now. So let's start at the very beginning. What was your origin story, James? What got you into magic?
My origin story. I heard you ask this to Vinny last week. So, essentially, my origin story, I don't want to go too much into what I did before the magic, but I started off as an ice skater. That was my life up till the age of 18.
Are you joking? That's amazing.
No, I was an ice dancer, British junior champion, 1997, a long, long, long time ago. So did all the jumps, all the spins, and danced with the partner as well, Tor Blundin style, I guess. Did all of that, 6 a.m. starts every day. And in between all of that, where was I that first got into magic? Right. Someone at school, I was about 12, 13, brought in a book on magic. And I just took that book home, kind of stole it off him when he wasn't looking, learned a few of the tricks out of it, really badly, of course, as you do. And I just kind of like got addicted to it, just learning little trick by little trick by little trick, not having a clue of where it would take me, of course. This is just at that young, naive age. So it wasn't the Paul Daniels magic set that started it off. Of course, that's something that we all had when we were younger. But when I read that book, something about it just grabbed me. I started learning new tricks and every week just showing little tricks to my family. And then it built up to a point when I was working at a garden centre and in Marple Bridge. And that garden centre, the guy there knew the owner of the Midland restaurant, which was across the road. And it was like a family-run restaurant, a Brewer's Fair at the time. So I've been doing magic now for about a year. And just
and how old around. How old are you at this point, by the way?
About 13 and a half, 14.
Okay, right.
Roundabout. And then at that time, I didn't know whether I liked stage or whether I liked close-up, or I didn't even know what really all this was. I just did it. I enjoyed the... going back on myself a bit before that, in between all of this, we found out there was a market stall in Stockport. And I used to go there once a week. I used to drag my mum along, and she used to invest in the odd little trip for me, especially my dad, more than anything, because we were very much a theatrical-based family. Mm. And then the garden centre guy introduced me to the owner of the restaurant and said it would be perfect for me to do magic around the tables once a week, every Sunday. And that's where I started. From the age of 14, I got my first gig every week, every Sunday, I forget now, for nearly 7 years or 6 years, roundabout, I did magic there. And wow. Sometimes extra days as well. You know, sometimes on the Sundays, I came in for a little extra thing. Christmas periods, almost every day. So it was a really great learning experience. And that is how I pretty much bring the whole base of my learning of magic, of performing and how to introduce myself and how to interact with people down to that.
Well, when you have a regular gig, no matter what age you are, when you have a regular gig and you go in there every single week, or it teaches you, you get so good so quickly at close-up magic. Yeah. It teaches you how to approach groups of people, how to deal with different types of people, how to, you're always working on new material.
Indeed, exactly.
It's the best thing that you can do, isn't it? To like become a really, yeah.
So, gained so much from that.
So you're doing that, but I'm guessing, even though you had a regular gig, yeah. I'm guessing magic wasn't your big thing, because you're talking about how you're a skating champion. And I know how I've got a friend who actually works with my kids' company, and she's a professional ice skater. So I know how much time she puts into doing that. And she's got so I know that in order to get to the level that you're telling me you're at 18, that must have been your primary focus. Am I right in that? Was the magic?
Completely, yeah. Yeah. Completely. It had to be, because I've been working at it since such a young, well, I say young, I wasn't the earliest of ages getting into skating. I was about 9 or 10, but I very quickly picked it up. And I was still competing around about that age of 17, 18, which is when I stopped in the end. But very much it was every day, 6 a.m. starts, weekends, mornings, sometimes evenings. And I trained with Joan Slater, who was the mother of Karen and Nikki Slater, who competed at the same time. They're on, I think, the Strictly Ice Dancing program.
Dancing on Ice, yeah.
Which I never watch. I should watch. But I don't know. It's one of those things I can't watch it. So I don't know why. Mm. And same time as Torben Dean.
What made you, if you don't mind me asking, and I hope it's not a personal question, what made you stop doing the ice skating? Because something that you've spent so much time in, early starts, late finishes, dedicating your life, pushing everything else to one side. What made you decide to go, well, you know what?
It was a big, big decision. There are lots of things, because at that age, of course, I'm going to school, then I'm going to college, began to get other interests. So some of those interests were computers, technology, websites. So I was at one point in an apprenticeship with an internet company in Stockport. Then I was training every day around all of this, doing competitions. But for maybe a 3-year period before I stopped skating, I was doing magic everywhere. And somebody said to me along the lines of, they knew that I was going to quit and become a magician before I had a clue. For me, my life was ice skating, but I was still doing magic everywhere I possibly could to every single person in the ice rink as I was growing up. And everywhere I went, I was doing a little trick here. And it was apparently obvious that was going to take over. Then on top of that, ice skating is a short-lived career. There was a pivotal point where I either continue, and it's not cheap. It's bloody expensive to buy the boots, the blades, dancing, the lessons cost a fortune. Then the outfits that you have to wear, all the Ponzi outfits and things, all of that costs an absolute arm and a leg. The travel, then you have broad travel. And then I had to ask myself, do I wish to be, once you finish competing, you only have really one option, is to teach or do shows. And again, shows is short lived. So you then have the option of teaching. And for me, I didn't really see myself teaching ice skating for the rest of my life. But I certainly saw myself doing magic because it was fun.
Wow. And
I think as you become young and you're sociable and you want to go out and you want to meet girls and all that, magic is great.
So did you? Oh, it really is. I imagine it's easier to get a girl doing them a magic trick than it is saying, hey, look at my ice skating outfit.
Yeah.
So you made a decision to quit ice skating, which was, as you said, a really big decision. Did you then throw yourself into the magic, or did you kind of, because you talked about how you had an apprenticeship and this and that and the other.
Yeah.
Did magic take over as a full-time thing then, or was that, did that happen later on?
That happened later on, definitely. That happened a good number of years later. While I was in the apprenticeship for the internet company, that's how I set up Magic World. So they taught me, instead of actually asking me to do all their work, apart from making cups of tea all day, they had me hard coding HTML, learning from scratch how to do tables, and then encouraged me to set up a website, a magic shop. So I set up Magic World. I was young. My dad invested in an Amstrad computer for me, got the internet, and got going. I got the domain name, luckily, back when it was a good time to get them, and set up this website that I don't think I knew what I was doing, I'll be honest, back then. I just kind of went with the flow and took a little bit of advice from everyone that I met, and slowly, because I think over the years it's built up, it's just been a great investment back at the time. But yeah, I didn't know what I wanted to do back then. I didn't know I wanted to be a magician. I didn't know I wanted to be a magic shop owner. Didn't know anything for a good couple of years after that.
Wow. So you created Magic World while you're in this apprenticeship.
Yes.
Did you then keep it up, or did it kind of fall to one side and you picked it up later on?
No, I kept it up like crazy. So I was in that apprenticeship for about 2 years. Left there, and I think I'd just finished skating by that point, and I was looking at all my different options. I think my mum wanted to maybe go into programming and different things like that. But that never appealed to me at all. It had to be, I think that by that point, a couple of years later, magic was the thing that was kind of like taking over. My dad was encouraging me. My dad was an opera singer, retired, for Opera North, and very larger than life character. 10 times more than I'll ever be. I mean, he's jumping up and down and singing in front of people on holiday, everywhere he gets. So I got that sort of performance bug from him. And because of that, he encouraged me to go for the dreams. And then I think about a year after that, it was that difficult decision of telling my mum and telling family, I don't want to do skating anymore. And they'd put all that money into it over the years. But then, you know, at first they thought, I think my mum especially, you can't do that because you're not going to make money from magic. So it took a lot to convince. And then down the line, it kind of clicked that actually we're doing quite well here.
That's great. That's awesome. So what advice, before we move on, what advice would you, because I get this all the time on the channel. People ask, oh, my family aren't supportive of me. I want to become a magician full time. And they're telling me to get a proper job. I know you didn't get that, because especially your dad being an opera singer, he would know the sacrifices that you need to make. But do you have any advice for people that are watching this that are kind of wanting to go full time, but they're not getting the support? Because it can be very difficult. And
it is. You know, if you don't have the support of your loved ones or anyone, or your girlfriend or anybody, it's really difficult to clear your brain, really, and say to yourself, I've got to go for this. We do listen to other people. We are influenced by our family more than anyone else. What I'd say is find a friend or find someone who does actually support you, sometimes your partner, and really, you know, feed off that a lot. At the end of the day, it is your decision. You've got to think wisely. Do you really enjoy magic that much that it's something you see yourself doing for the rest of your life or for a long period? And if it is, go out there, find, either be on the street, do some magic, find a restaurant, ask if you can do some magic. I was doing magic back in the day for 20 quid an hour, and that was a lot of money for a 14-year-old. And I had so much fun doing it. So don't think about the money. Don't think about a career. If you're too young, just get out and enjoy your magic. You might have to have a second job at the same time. You might be working to be, I mean, I've no friends who've got their graduation as lawyers, like Vinny as well, you know. Have a backup, if you can. Have a backup. My backup's my printing business. But I didn't know that till later on in my career. And I guess not every young person knows what they want to do either. So yeah. I'd say, when you don't know what you want to do, enjoy the magic. Because it's so easy when you get older to not lose that enjoyment, but to stray away from it. And when you're younger and you're learning magic, they were the most fun times of my life. And I am getting that back right now. But how do I, am I kind of going around the houses here?
Yeah, no. This is incredible advice. I understand exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not very good at, you know, getting straight to the point. There's so many branches really to that answer, but it is just get out there, do it. Don't be put off. And I have a backup as well.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. That's really good advice. So when did you start performing? So you obviously set up Magic World. You were still doing a whole bunch of other stuff as well. Yep. When did you go full time as a performer stroke magic shop owner? When did you kind of go, right, okay, I don't need any other income. Now I'm just going to focus primarily on magic. Because obviously, I know you've got a printing business, but that came down the line. So that wasn't at this point. Yeah.
So it was, I think, how old was I when I first started getting more gigs? I think I was probably about 15, 16 when I started branching out away from the restaurant, getting more gigs. But more, I would say 17 or 18. That's when I started promoting myself, getting a couple of little parties here, a few little jobs here, but not a lot. Because I still wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do. And then, really hard to say exactly what, I'm trying to go back in time.
It's hard, isn't it, to look back and,
it is sometimes. I don't know. I think with the current circumstances, we kind of forget what's happened after 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, like, we do, don't we? Yeah, 100%.
Go back to the question again.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's just, when did you decide to go full time?
Yeah. So it was about, I was about 22, 23, I'd say.
Okay.
22, 23. Okay. And at the same time, the website continued to have bringing in sales. So it started off really, really small. I set up the website with the internet company. And I think maybe 5 months later, I got my first sale or 4 months, something like that. And I couldn't believe it. Money came in. You know what you like at that age. And slowly then more and more sales started coming in. And it, by no means was it a full time. It was a long way off. I mean, we're talking 5, 6, 7 years away before even close to being able to pay for all my bills. But I knew I was on the right road. I had lots of people who helped me out along the way. There was a magician called Doug Gregg in Chester at the time. And I think I found him in the Yellow Pages. But I went there and just introduced myself, rang him up once. He said, yeah, come round. It was quite scary doing that nowadays. But yeah, just went round, learned magic. And he became a really good friend, helped me out with a lot of the stage side because he used to do the stage magic. And then also in Offerton, we had a guy called David Duval, who was a famous escapologist. And he and his wife, not his wife, I shouldn't say that, sorry, Jean, helped a lot with the development of me as not just as a magician, but also more for the actual shop side. I started off by wholesaling their products because they were local. They manufactured all their own tricks and they focused on escapology equipment. So I think for the first 6 years, Magic World was selling escapology. It was selling all the trick handcuffs, grease lightning handcuffs. And that was, I think I can credit Magic World for being planted on the map because of that, by focusing on something that not every other magic shop was selling.
Mm.
Without that, I don't know if it would have been the same shop it is today, to be honest.
That's great. Well, I mean, now we think of Magic World and it's up there as one of the top dealers, you know, out there, especially in the UK. And you have your own range of tricks and you bring your own products out as well as other people's coming in. Somebody asked me a question on my channel a few months ago, and they said, would you ever open up a magic dealership? And I said, absolutely not in a million years.
Yeah.
It must be a very hard job in a very, especially with the fact that like you've got this one overarching wholesaler, which is Murphy's.
Yeah.
So it's hard to differentiate because everybody's selling the same tricks because everything comes through that.
It is
difficult, isn't it?
Well, it was, like I say, at least 7 years before Magic World was earning enough to actually kind of pay for some bills and go for things. Then I had the performing as well, which came in. But I remember at one point in my life, I moved out to another house and I was sharing with a friend, first time I ever did that. And, at that age, you don't look at your accounts. You have no idea. You just kind of go out there and do it. And then suddenly you realize, okay, actually, I'm not earning as much money as I thought because he had to move out. I was paying for the whole full house. I couldn't afford it. So I had to, I was probably about 18, 19 at this point, or 19, 20 maybe. And I moved out and had to go back with my family for another few years. And then finally got my first place. But it was definitely 7 or 8 years after, 27 before it was a point where he was actually paying for everything. Then I realized, of course, you can do wedding magic, you can do corporate magic, and I built on that. But before we get into like the magic world side of things, I was very much, one thing that I have to say is that I got into magic not knowing whether what was stage or close up, which one I wanted to do, but I did mix magic, illusion, dancing, because I used to do a lot of ballroom dancing as part of training for ice skating. So I created a show called Latin Magic. And I created the illusions. We went on the cruise ships doing illusions for 6 to 7 years. And while I was doing that, Magic World was just steadily running in the background. My dad was going around the corner to David Vow to pick up all the stock. And he was doing all the shipping and all the magic boxes and everything while I was away on a cruise ship, just docking in occasionally, getting on the internet that's really bad, checking in. So everything's kind of like been run, but kind of, you know, it's hard to focus on one thing while you're off on a cruise ship doing magic. So I was kind of, I guess, finding what I wanted to do in life, finding whether I wanted to be a stage magician, whether I wanted to be a close-up magician, whether I wanted to work on cruise ships for the rest of my life, or whether I wanted to set up, you know, I don't know exactly, just work on what it was I wanted to work on, essentially.
But it's nice that you had all these options open to you, because, you know, what you've just said there, you know, going on cruise ships, that's something that a lot of performers aspire to. That's their ultimate goal. Yeah. Oh, one day I would make it if I got to be a cruise ship performer. You're doing it for 7 years, kind of thinking, is this what I really want to do? Wow.
Yep.
And also you get so good doing cruise ships. You know, I speak to a lot of acts that say, hey, you know, it makes you so polished because you're doing the same show over and over and over and over again.
Yep, it certainly does. Certainly does. And I think I have, my only regret is not bringing in enough new, like I was doing 2 45-minute shows at the time, big illusions, but I kind of wish I was bringing in more tricks regularly. So if I ever had that opportunity again, I would definitely not just stick to the same routine I did started at the beginning. I think maybe 4 years down the road, I maybe introduced about 6, 7 new effects, but I wasn't trialing out, doing new things and pushing the boundaries as much as I probably could have done. So I'd say if you ever get any opportunity to be in front of a live audience, regularly doing the same show, don't be afraid of putting new things in, trying things, and really pushing the limits of your performance and your scripting.
That's really good advice. Really, really good advice. When you finished working on cruise ships, did you continue to be a stage performer, or did you focus on close-up and focus on the dealership?
I continued, but I focused more on the close-up. So my illusions were all there ready to go. And whenever we got asked to do an illusion show, it could be for a small corporate marquee, or it could be on a stage somewhere, or it could be, trying to think the last one we did. It was one of those, the last one I ever did was a Christmas party, one of these big places in Event City in Manchester, that kind of thing, where all the corporate people rent a million tables and they got a stage show in between everyone getting drunk and having a crazy party. So that was the last time I got my illusions out, probably about 7 years ago now, or 8 years ago. It's quite sad, really. And they're all in my parents' garage now, for sale. So I'm just telling people they're for sale, because I've been so reluctant to get rid of them for so many years. And I thought it's now the time. But I didn't know exactly that I was going to stop until 5 years ago, probably 5, 6 years ago. It was my decision that I will never get them out again.
And what made you go to that decision? Like, what made you decide, right, that's it? Because that's another big decision, isn't it, really?
Okay.
Especially if you spent so many years doing that show, to kind of go, right, that's it. I'm drawing a line under that now.
Yeah, because I kind of wanted to focus on the close-up. I kind of wanted to focus on the magic world. And by this time, the printing as well had just come in place. And I knew I couldn't juggle so many things, simple as that, really. And I didn't lose my passion, but it was hard work setting up all the illusions, having the flight cases, the setups. And that is what got me down. And I'll be honest, I love the performing part. If I could just do the performing and not have to do the setups, I would still be doing it today.
That's very true. As somebody who does an illusion act, I can totally and completely relate to it. You know, it's so much easier walking up to a gig with a little close-up case going, right, I'm done. Yeah. And then walking out compared to, you know, an illusion act where you need vans and warehouses and God knows what.
Yeah, but it was worth it. It was worth everything. And just to do that 40 minutes again on the cruise, it's worth all the setup for a day just to do it. But it comes a point where you do it all the time. Right, now what's my next? What's next in life? Do I stay on the cruise ship and work for the rest of my life? And well, for a good period. And if I did, I probably would have paid off my house 3-4 times quicker than what I'm doing at the moment. But you sacrifice things. You sacrifice your life at home. You sacrifice who you are at home. So you're not easily going to get as much magic or gigs and bookings when you're at home. But then do you need to, because you're away on a ship next week for another week? But even then, nothing's guaranteed. And they could just cut you off and you stop doing cruises. And now where are you? So I was a firm believer of building up the magic world, keeping that going, and building up the close-up magic, keeping that going. And yeah, I got a little bit lazy as I got older, and just carrying a little box and just going there to a wedding is...
It's true what you say, though. I know a lot of cruise performers that have stopped doing cruises for whatever reason, and they've really struggled because that they'd never had time to take on any other work, so they didn't bother marketing or promoting themselves, And when that work goes, they're kind of left in limbo with nowhere to go and nowhere to turn. And
exactly,
despite being incredible performers, there's no work coming in. Yeah. It can be an issue.
Yeah. But then, I mean, in so many ways, it's great because you're not paying attention to the real world. So you're not focusing on what magicians are saying all the time. You're just literally your own creative nature with all your DVDs and following how to do magic. But you're not limited by all the criticism, all the Facebook and all the things that are happening, which I don't know if it's a good or bad thing. Who knows?
Yeah, I again, completely agree with you. We're totally on the same page here. I'm going to ask you one question before we move on from that, as you brought up stage magic. Do you have any advice of moving from close-up to stage as somebody who started off as close-up, moved on to stage, then went back to close-up? Sort of advice for how to go from one, because it's a completely different thing.
It is. I would say, I mean, it's been a while since I've thought about all the close, you know, the stage magic side and the theory, but I would say, first of all, before you do any of it, get some books on stage magic, on presentations and personalities, because who do you want to be? Do you want to be that extravagant David Copperfield doing some artful movement on stage, or do you wish to just be stood there doing mentalism and creating intrigue? Work out your character, who you want to be, then build it around that. Look at ways you can improve your performance by other means outside of magic. So for me, it was the ballroom and Latin dancing that got me into Latin magic, and that's what made the act stand out. We were 1 minute doing a cha-cha or a rumba while handcuffs were jumping off me and appearing on someone else, and escapology built in with it. So it is about finding who you are, who you'd like to be on stage. And that's not something that's going to come out immediately. So you might want to test and try different personalities as such. Mm. And while we always say be yourself on stage, you don't have to be. You can be anybody you want. You can invent personalities. You can do anything. And where do you want to be in 5-10 years? I mean, it's a tough question for anyone, but do you want to be doing that show as that character? Or do you want to be doing this show as that character? And really just get in front of a camera, play around with different things, and kind of look at other artists and see which ones do you gel to, which ones do you like, which ones are you inspired by, and then go in that direction. But have a clear focus on which direction you want to go in.
Great. Very good advice. Again, very good advice. So we've kind of covered a lot of your career. Where are you? Put aside the printing business, we'll get to this in a minute.
Yeah,
where are you right now with performing versus being a magic dealer? And the reason I bring that up is I spoke to Peter Nardi on this channel, and he told me the story about how he loves performing, but his dealership, Alakazam, takes up so much of his energy, he just had to stopped performing completely outside of friends and family,
yeah,
and doesn't have time to perform anymore because it's such a full-on thing running Alakazam. Now, I know, yeah. I mean, we've been to gigs before. We've worked at the same close-up job together more than once. I know that you go out and gig. Is it still something that you go and perform? Are you still performing now? Or is the focus primarily on other things?
Definitely performing, 100%. So I have, okay, I'm performing, but I'm not pushing the boundaries in my performance side. I've noticed in the last 2 years that before everything happened, I was at the top of Google, the Manchester Magician, literally the top. And now I'm not anywhere to be seen. I've let my guard drop, and I've done that because I'm not focused. I've not been as focused as I would normally be in my performing, because my attentions have been taken with the magic world. And like Peter Nardi says, it's a lot of work creating a shop, keeping it going, marketing, inventing new tricks. And that's one of the reasons why I am a solid performer. I'm always out there doing gigs, but I'm not one of these doing, I'm not claiming to be doing 30 gigs a month every single day throughout December. Nah, I've got 3 gigs this month. Two of them were cancelled. It's just, I have enough to keep me going. I do wedding fairs when I need to, and I get my weddings booked in for a couple of years in advance. But I'm just happy doing 10, 12, 20 gigs a year, whatever it may be. I'm happy with that. I'm not trying to push the boundaries at the moment, just because I know my limitations, and I am one of those these personalities that try to do too much. And I fall victim to it all the time. And when you do that, you get stressed. You don't enjoy the gigs as much. Whereas now, when I go out, I really enjoy them.
That's great. That's really cool.
I do still perform very much. I do my walk around magic. I am a hypnotist by trade as well, which I have not brought that in to this, but I'm a clinical hypnotherapist.
Where did that come from? That threw me for a six. When did that happen? Are we talking about hypnotism as in for magical purposes or for entertainment purposes, or are we talking about?
That's what got me into it. That's what the idea of that stage hypnosis was what originally drew me to it. It was seeing a stage hypnotist called David Knight on the cruise ships. And I wanted to learn it so badly. I kept seeing him do his shows. And after about nearly a year and a half of meeting him regularly on the ships, he eventually trained me up, but not without a cost. It cost me a bloody fortune. I went and trained with his proper courses, did it learning both clinical first and then the stage. Because for him, it was very much learn it properly. Don't just learn how to do, make people's hands stick to their foreheads or whatever. Learn the clinical side, because then you've got a basis, then go into the stage side as well. So I kind of did it all. And at the same time, I met the Grumbleweeds, and he was very much doing a lot of hypnosis. So I trained with hypnosis from him. That's where I hypnotized my first person. And he taught me how to hypnotize somebody. I put them out. I couldn't believe it. He left me for a week before he came back on board the ship and gave me scripts and things to write down and things to say. And through those two mixes, that's how I first got into hypnosis.
That's incredible. That's awesome.
I love it. So then after that, I got into clinical weight loss gastric band hypnosis. And I set up I think the website's still up there, but I don't use it anymore. Magnosis.co.uk. It's very old pictures of me and Joy, my old assistant, in the chair, fast asleep. But I specialised in fears, phobias, but also weight loss gastric band. So helping people lose weight, making them believe that their stomach is shrunk, size of a golf ball, and they only eat when they're hungry and stop when they're satisfied. And by doing that, I ended up with 5 or 6 clients a day in my old apartment. And that took up about 3 years of my life. And then I decided that I don't want to do clinical hypnotherapy. So I stopped. Then I went into stage and finally did my stage show 4 years after learning the clinical hypnotherapy. And that's not my plan. My plan was learn stage hypnosis, go and be a stage performer as well. I did my stage hypnosis shows, my first one, way down the line. And I've done about 20, 30 since then.
And do you still do that?
I've got the show ready to go.
Yes, then.
I just don't push it. The last time I did one was 3 years ago now, a corporate gig. It's ready to go, yeah. But I miss that side. This is my problem. I've got too many things that I do and I never can focus on one thing. So, you know, if anything, I think I preferred the stage hypnosis than the illusions at one point. And if I ever went back on the cruise ships, I would go on as a stage hypnotist.
Wow. Wow. Okay. That's really, really interesting. That's really fascinating. And do you bring elements of hypnotism into your close-up work? Because I don't do any hypnotism. I like watching it, but I see, you know, I've got friends like Mark Lavelle, for example, who I see do something like coin vexed, and, you know, they're holding this bent coin and they can't open their hand. Yeah. And I look at it and I'm like, that does heighten magic when you're doing it close up, having that element there. You know.
Yeah, I 100%. I started mixing it in a couple of years after started learning it. Coinvex was a perfect classic example, because when it's bending in the hand, if you can make them imagine that they're feeling it at the same time, maybe feel a bit of temperature, feel warmth or cold, and at the same time feel it bending, it turns it from just, it makes it more believable that it's actually happened there and then in their hand. But then if you can also make them not open the hand beforehand, then it totally freaks them out. So all this compounded into an effect can definitely make it a miracle.
Wow. That's incredible. So let's talk about Magic World, because that's obviously, you set it up many, many years ago and it's grown huge now. Like you're doing orders every day. A lot of people swear by Magic World as their website, and that's the place that
very nice of them.
You know, you mentioned Vinny earlier on. You know, when you think about Vinny and you think about Neo Magic, he just stocks his own products, whilst you stock pretty much everything, and stock all of the Murphy's stuff, but you also have your own line of products as well,
because he's wise.
Well, I was going to ask you, like, is there an advantage to stocking all of the Murphy stuff when everyone else does it as well? Or, you know, what made you decide to kind of, because there must be more work in it. Like, if you're stocking everything, everything, like that the amount of stuff that comes out daily, you must be constantly updating Magic. Well, I don't know. I mean, surely there's more work to it.
It's a crazy amount of work. But over the years, I've learned how to run it more efficiently. So from websites that are automated and systems automated, all this, I've done everything I can to automate everything I do, whether it be Magic World or any other companies I run, so that I have to do the minimal amount of work in admin. So we have the website. I mean, for example, we used to have Facebook messages, Instagram messages. We used to have emails, all these different ways of people communicating with you. And we've got rid of all that. We just have an online chat. And even then, we're not always available. We answer within 24 hours. And it sounds like, you know, some people say, oh, why can't we just call you on a phone? It's just too much to try and run the company, to deal with the Magic World, the products from Murphy's Magic, and to do all this. And then to spend the time chasing up orders and looking at all the different forms of communication, it just eats into your life. So I had to make that decision. If I do keep Murphy's, I have to reduce and minimize the amount of work that I do, because we don't make a lot out of it, especially after importing and everything else. But at the same time, it is more of a numbers game. Do I get rid of it completely and focus on my own products? Which I do have that option. I've got a button I can click and it turns everything off except for our products. But other people have done that. I think PropDog only sell their own products. And I thought, no, for me, I'm going to continue doing this. It does draw people to the website.
I imagine if somebody brings out something awesome, at the moment, the big thing is Switcher 2 by Mark Mason.
Switcher 2 and ABC.
Which are being distributed by Murphy's.
Yeah.
If you have that on your site, people might go to your site to see that and then see your own products and go, well, actually, I'll pick that up, but I'll also pick that up and that up and that up.
Okay. So that's I've just launched a new website. It's on WordPress now rather than the old systems I used to use, which now means I can make more customizations myself instead of spending thousands of pounds with somebody just to make a few changes here and there. So that's made a massive difference. And focusing on my own products is the next part. where I need to start releasing more tricks again, which is something we were trying to release 6 to 10 tricks a year. So that's starting. We've got, I think, a new trick coming out in a couple of weeks. We've just shipped to Murphy's. I thought I brought them here. No, I didn't. Deadly Mark decks, which are a bugger to make, to be honest, but they are, takes 30 minutes to make one deck of these. And it's the Touch Mark deck, where you can actually feel on the back what the card is. And
wow. It's an
invisible marking system that's printed using our massive machines. So you can be blindfolded, you can tell what the playing card is. So we've literally just finished printing 300 of them in Red Bee, Blue Bee, and Blue Bicycle, and shipping them today to Murphy's. So in 3 or 4 days' time, just a little bit late for Christmas, but maybe just in time for some, they'll be appearing. But
that's
I wish I was releasing more tricks more speedily. That's the thing. So running it all is just too much to do. For one person.
And how do you, like, the tricks that you release, your own product line,
yeah,
not all of them are created by you. You have other artists they are all just you, is it?
Whoever wants to bring tricks to me, but I'll be honest, I do pick and choose very much what I'm releasing, because I've got a list now of maybe 20, 30 tricks I should be releasing. I've not got around to releasing them. But I've kind of picked a lot from Julio Montoro. He's become a really good friend over the years. I go out to Spain, we film with him, and I've been releasing several tricks with him that I've got more to be coming up. Mark Elsden, we've done a lot with Mark. And then I got mixes with myself. And of course, the very first trick that that Vinny brought out, the experiment, things like that. So we're always open to ideas that people have. And please do consider coming to us for these routines. We do a great job of the packaging and the creation, of course, with the printing playing cards. But yeah, it's a whirlwind of different things. So I'm kind of just doing as many as I can, as well as I can. And that's what it's about. I don't want to just release something quickly and do a half-assed job of it. At the end of the day, it's got to have really good videos. It's got to be a product I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, half the time I'm coming up with ideas and I'm mixing it in with other people's ideas that I've bought and bringing them together and releasing them as fast as I can.
That's amazing. And what I suppose, if somebody wants to work with you, what, and they, you know, they listen to this interview and they think, oh, yeah, I've got a really good idea, I'd like to speak to I'd like to speak to James about that.
Yep.
What would they do? Is it a case of, is there a submission page on your website, or is it a case of just going into the online chat, or how would they?
The online chat right now. There is a submission page, but since switching over to WordPress about a month and a half ago, that might not be as it was. So we're going to fix that soon. So online chat, if you've got an effect, just pop in, shoot a little YouTube video, send it over to us, and that way we can see it nice and quickly and let us know your thoughts on the product and what it is and what you hope to achieve out of it. And certainly we're open to creating the product and making it look absolutely awesome.
Brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great. And what made you decide to become a magic reviewer as well? Because the other thing is, you make, now, because I'm a magic reviewer, I know how much of a pain in the butt it can be. You can't please everybody, it's impossible.
No.
But I listen to the chatter on the internet, and a lot of people go, oh, you can't be a magic guy. I had this when I was affiliated with World Magic Shop. Yeah. How can World Magic Shop have a magic, have a review show when they're a magic dealer? Surely you can't be a magic dealer and have a review show. And oh, you should only be reviewing projects if you're not. I know. But yeah, what made you decide to go down the route of reviewing? You know,
I honestly can't remember. It was with Sam Fitton, and he suggested that I set up a review show. And I had a little shop above a company, not where I'm at currently at now, but 5-6 years ago, I lived in Bellevue sort of area, Stockport, Manchester. And there I lived, I had a print, and my magic shop was above a printing shop called Northern Print. And in there, that's where I did all the reviews. So I've kind of, it has been a very much a small growth of 1 minute going from my dad's sort of like house to running Magic World from my own house, to then having an actual physical magic shop. And then jumping to a bigger magic shop or bigger premises. So quite humbling experience going through all of that. But Sam suggested doing the reviews. He came on the very first review. So if you go to the YouTube and search Magic World Review Show and go to the very first one, I think you'll see Sam Fitton with his strong opinions, as always. And it just worked really well. So I started off with Sam, and I started off with Daniel Meadows, who was the inventor of the Deadly Mark deck. And he, both of those two people came on quite regularly, I think, for the first 50, 60 episodes. Some of my, just me on my own, but I just did whatever I could, when I could, with no real goal. And that's my mistake. So that's the thing. It's like, you're goal orientated, and I can see that in your review show and how you are now. That's how I started, but without having the goals. I knew I was going to set one every week. Didn't exactly know what I wanted to achieve by it, especially because I started it at the beginning, you know, the earlier times of Magic World. But all I know is I enjoyed it, and it got me an audience, and I did notice sales improving. And so, yeah, it was just one of those things that I enjoyed. And then for some reason, and I don't know why, recently I have slowed down with it. And I'm sure some people might notice that I used to do a show, two shows a week, and sometimes three products per show. And now I just do one product a show, and I don't do anywhere near enough review shows. And I need to get back into that. And I know I will soon, but I don't know when.
Fair enough. Well, a lot of the, you know, you've mentioned in a few things in this interview, like, hey, I used to be on page one of Google, and that's, you know, kind of slowly slipped away. And I did review shows, and that slowly slipped away.
Yeah.
And I think a large part of that is because you have this other company.
It is.
That it's fair to say has blown up and become one of your biggest things.
It's getting there.
If not the biggest thing that you're doing, which is your printing company. Now, this is, I don't know if you've branched out now, but I know when you originally started the company, it was specifically for magicians printing on playing cards, right?
Yes, exactly.
So tell us about that. Tell us about why you set this up. You've got all this other stuff going on.
Yeah.
You're a performer. You're a reviewer. You're a magic dealer. You know, you've got stage shows going on.
It's exhausting, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then you go, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to set up another company. Let's do Print by Magic. It's like, what?
Before I bore people with that, I mean, by no means is it taken over. And I have always, I've been at two minds. Do I sell, even maybe last year, I was even thinking, do I sell Magic World, move on? And do I focus on one area? And I very quickly cancelled that out and said, no, I love my magic. I love my performing. I love my reviews. And this is why I've just built this new little studio. This is part of the reason, because Print by Magic has now taken over what was my studio downstairs. So I used to have a magic shop downstairs, and you'd walk through the magic shop to the studio, to a secret door where I did shows downstairs before the COVID. And then you'd go out the back to a massive sort of like quadruple garage, all beautifully set up, and that's our printing office. But the printing has grown that much that I had to slowly, I got rid of the magic shop because I realized that the amount of time you spend with customers, I'm afraid, when they're coming in, and not just during the week, but at the weekend, it was eating so much into my life, and the printing was coming in that thick and fast. I had to make a decision. Do I continue or do I wipe out the magic shop, which I did during COVID, I'm afraid. It's all online only now, very much so. And just kind of focus on the printing. So I got rid of my studio downstairs, put it up here, still building it at the moment. And the printing shop has just, it just keeps taking over, eating away a little bit more. But I have my limits. It's not going to eat into me doing reviews. I'm going to start doing more of those. I'm trying to do everything I can to free up my time so that I have more time to put it into enjoying magic.
Yeah.
So I can still run Magic World very effectively. It's been doing a great job. And I've got Josh now, my new apprentice, and he's doing all the shipping and all the printing. So it just frees up my time to do more of this. But the printing did take over, and the printing started off from, where did it start exactly? Okay. It was a fairly well-known printing company that I saw advertising something. That's all I was going to say. I'm quite protective over the actual, how we do certain things, but I saw an opportunity, and I always wanted to print onto playing cards. So I don't know why there was some sort of, I just felt drawn to it. And I thought, okay, let's pitch an idea to them. I am going to, these printers are crazy expensive. We're talking 30 grand plus to be able to do what I wanted to be able to do. And I couldn't afford that. No way. So I pitched, I went down with a keynote presentation, probably the biggest thing I've ever done in my life. And I, after speaking on the phone to one of the sales guys there, eventually he introduced me to the CEO. And I went down and presented this to him. They put me up overnight and I walked away being the magician on their trade show stand for the next, well, even up to this day if they need me, but I did about 8 shows for them. I've traveled to all the different European partners for them. And for that, helped towards this printer. And that's how I got into printing playing cards.
Wow.
Before buying the printer, I did tests on another version of a printer, similar, so that I knew that there was a market. So I went to Hobbs Reprographics in Manchester and I befriended one of the guys there. The next minute, I'm just testing out the market, seeing if magicians are interested. Then I realized there is a demand here. Probably not enough demand to warrant the cost of the printer, but I just took the leap and I went for it.
Well, I know. I mean, and what sort of customers do you have for it? Because I know that, you know, my friend Lloyd Barnes speaks very highly of you because he's always coming up with ideas for gaffed cards. And rather than going directly and having a massive print run for whoever is doing it for, he'll come to you and say, look, can you make these gaffs for me? I wanted to. And I imagine that's one market. I mean, who else do you have?
That's our biggest names, market.
But I mean, what type of people? Yeah.
Well, I mean.
How is it?
So many magic shops around the world. It could be Magic Factory. It could right down to performers like I'm trying to think which performers. We've done it for so many performers around the world who may be doing a TV show here. Might have done it for Dynamo on his TV show multiple times now. I think where he made a picture appear on the shard, on the glass in front of the kids there. We've done it for Richard Jones on his TV show at the very end where he produces the final picture. We've printed for so many magicians and companies like magic shops like Alakazam. And it's just a great way of like, before ourselves, and there's no easy way of printing onto a bicycle playing card. You can try, you can get an inkjet printer and do a very poor job, or some, you might get lucky here and there with some printers, but we put so much time into the colors, getting them to match the red backs, all the colors of the pips to match, so you can put one of our gaff cards inside it, so you wouldn't tell it's even there. So magicians now who are on television around the world are wanting to buy them. So we kind of do what, I think there's only one other company that, I think they've stopped doing it now, but Zazzle, they were printing playing cards on bicycle. But what they don't do is the color matching, making sure it's right for magicians. So that's why we take it one step further. And our market really is everyone from people who are inventing tricks, or they need a deck of cards for Kickstarter to film with before they go and get all the numbers printed. And sometimes it's worthwhile creating and printing with us, and sometimes it's not. If you've got like a magic effect with a full deck of cards, for instance, double-sided printing, and you expect to package that up and sell it to somebody, you're not going to do that through us because it's going to cost way too much. But if you've got a packet effect of 5, 6, 7 cards, some double-sided, some not, it's instead of spending how much, £4,000-£5,000 with USPS, it's definitely worth coming to us. And then we print onto the bicycle stock, which is the best thing ever, and Phoenix as well.
Wow. And have you branched out since then, or is that primarily still your market? You haven't gone into commercial printing and printing leaflets and T-shirts and so, or is that something that you're doing as well?
Well, it is. But again, I am diminishing some areas. So we can print on anything. That's the whole slogan. If you go on the website, printbymagic.com, you'll notice now it's not as geared to magicians as it was. There's a magicians tab and you can get to it very easily. Or if you search playing cards, personalized, bicycle, we come up. But now we are, I'd say probably about 30% regular people and 70% magicians right now. And we're trying to build on, of course, the outside part, because the magician side is always going to be there. We're never going to let it go. It's doing great. But printing for wedding exhibitions and the big printing, we've got wide format printers, so we can print 1.6 meters. Basically, over the years, I've invested tons of money into new systems, new printers. all sorts of things, laser cutters, we've got everything, injection molding machines. Our newest thing is a packaging machine. So I brought a little sample here, but this is something that someone asked me to, we're testing a box at the moment. So you provide us with a template of a box that might be the lines and the creases. And without heavy investment of blades and stuff, we can now do this on a new machine that came during COVID. So any sort of packaging for magicians, again, we love cats here. So we're just playing around with ideas. So yeah, packaging is an area that we're going into with one new machine that I've got. And we've done lots of the packaging again for Julio just recently, or any sort of stickers that you need cutting out or whatever, massive vinyl prints, we can do it.
That's amazing. That's great. No wonder it's taking up a long part of your time.
It is. And it's a learning curve, but I've invested so much in all these new machines, but really I should just focus on one machine. One machine instead of all these machines that can do different things. So I'm now focusing on just certain areas. Packaging is one, and magicians still. And the stickers, that's one of the other things, very popular. So learn as we go along.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Wow. But I want to ask you one more question. Yeah,
before you do that, I will say one thing, though. I am looking for another employee, I am the employer, to help out with Print by Magic and Magic World. But if anyone is looking for a job at the moment who does have Illustrator and Photoshop skills, do get in touch, either via live chat or whatever, because I had a point where 2 weeks ago I lost 2 staff in 1 week. Oh. And just before Christmas, not the best time. So I very quickly managed to get another apprentice. He's a brilliant, Josh. If you ever go to Print by Magic and you speak to someone on the phone, it's often Josh who deals with the laying out of the cards now and the printing. Before that, it was Scott for 5 years. He was brilliant. So I am looking for another person to work who is always great if you've got someone who has a bit of experience within the magic community as well, because you are often designing playing cards for this magician and they need specific angles of blank before the pip starts. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So
if it sounds interesting to anyone, please do get in touch.
That's amazing. Again, by the live chat. Yeah?
Yeah. That's the best thing.
Okay. Okay. So I want to ask you one more question before go for my final question, which is, do you have any advice? You know, you've created your own magic tricks.
Yeah.
You print playing cards for creators of magic tricks. You release magic tricks for other creators through your company, Magic World. Yeah. Do you have any advice when it comes to creating a magic trick? Any advice at all? Because it's that holy grail goal for a lot of magicians. I want to create my own trick.
Wow. Now, I never know what to really say to this question. There's so much great advice out there from so many great magicians. For me, I went through a stumbling block maybe about 6-7 years ago. Is like, how do I become creative? How do I come up with tricks? I don't have any ideas. And I remember reading lots of books on creativity. I listened to, I think it was Jay Sankey did a DVD or a CD on creativity and creating your own magic. And I think some of these helped. So get a couple of them is what I'd say, is that Jay Sankey one really helped with the creativity at the time. But again, I think it more came down to learn fun. It depends what you want to create. Do you want to create the next mind reading miracle, which is going to require heavy thoughts and ideas, or easy, simple magic? Have an idea of what your outcome is, what kind of trick you want to develop. Like Vinny has a very clear 3 stages of what he wants to, every trick has to match to be able to, before he even thinks about creating it. So have a clear idea of the difficulty, what you'd like to create. Then the idea itself, just come up with an idea. Don't think about how to do it, the method. For me, anyway, the idea comes into my mind when I am never thinking about magic. It often comes into my mind when I'm watching a movie. I always have my cards in my hand, so I might be watching the film. That's what I used to enjoy more than anything was Cineworld and just being sat there watching a movie. And is that you or me?
Oh,
that's this live here. Don't worry, I'm going to fix that. Here we go. I've got new lights in here, so.
There you go.
Is that going to improve things? It's going to be have to sit on the table like that, but.
No, that's fine. That looks good.
Work.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Where were we? So he's come up with the product itself, an idea of something, what you want to create. So you want to make something vanish, something happen to this, whatever it is, come up with the actual idea itself, then figure out a way to do it. And there's always a way. And sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. And you write every single idea down in your notebook. And sometimes I would say, write every single idea down. You'll go back to it a week later or a few days later. Some will be great idea. Some of them you think, that's rubbish. Don't delete it yet. Go back another few days and go through it. And then if you still think it's bad, clear it off the list. Make a clear list of the ones that you're passionate about, the ones that you enjoy, because that's what it comes from. But most of my ideas didn't come from watching other people's doing magic. It was more from while I'm watching a movie, or wouldn't it be great if this could happen? Occasionally, yeah. Some ideas did come from, I'm trying to think where certain tricks came from, but they came along with collaboration with other magicians. So yeah. I would show an idea I have to a fellow magician and say, oh, that's really good, that. But what if you do it this way? Tried it this way. And because of that, that completely changed this trick out of the blue, which was, not sure if you're aware of it, but they touch a card, they think about it, you snap your fingers, and you go through the cards and it's vanished. Very simple method, but it fools magicians. But Vinny helped me out with this in a pub. And it was like, why don't you take it one step further? It's like, you show some blue cards first, both sides, very simple handling. You put them into the spectator's hand. Now you make the card vanish from there, from the red deck, and appears in the blue deck. So just adding one little tweak to it can completely change it. So collaborating, I would say, is fun as well. But being careful how you collaborate, because some people will steal your ideas.
Yeah.
Only trust your really best mates with it.
It's very true. It's very, very true. Very, very true. But, okay.
Trying to think of any other advice I have on that, really. It's like, it is just, it will come. That's kind of all I'm going to say is, like, if you don't have any ideas right now, don't force them out. Just learn new tricks. Spend time learning your card magic and your technique as such. And not so much sleights of hand, but more actual routines. Delve into the books. Learn one trick a week. Just play around with it. Don't force yourself too much. And eventually the ideas are just going to start coming and they will just flow if that's where you want to go. But first, create the magic for yourself is probably what I would do most. Like, I'm trying not to do a product placement here. Blistering. I created this purely for myself. It was the blister on a key ring. It's been done before out of certain objects, but we wanted it to be something that was durable, that was on your side here, that you could squeeze any time and you got a perfect impression on your hand.
Yeah.
And it was out of passion for creating something I wanted to do in the real world that came about for creating that. And
that makes sense.
Yeah, it's just have fun.
Well, here's a question for you. Out of everything that Magic World has released, what is your favorite trick? And out of every trick you've ever seen that's not Magic World, what's your favorite trick? Because you stock everything, so you've seen a lot of stuff.
See a lot. Right. I'll try and say my favorite. I'm going to say what I think is going to be my favorite trick that's going to be coming soon. It's a trick I will be releasing. It's going to be probably a month or two. I can't really say I'm not going to say too much because, of course, it's going to be a golden pipeline product. However, it's called Squeeze. That's all I'm going to say. And I think I've demonstrated it in the past, but it's just a really fun trick, squeezing a playing card down into miniature sizes. And they have souvenirs. That's all I'm going to say. It's a wonderful little trick. It's fun. It's the kind of trick that I would do at a gig. And it's visual. It's just, and it leaves them with a souvenir. So that's one of my favorite tricks at the moment. That will be coming out in about a month to two with Murphy's. One of my favorite all-time, my two favorite tricks I've released probably are The Experiment by Vinny Sagu, which we do have on our website. I know Murphy's have stopped selling it now, but that's one of my all-time favorite tricks. I do that. Have you ever seen it?
Yes, it's really good.
Yeah, the one with the ESP and two sets of ESP cards. And it's one of those tricks that is self-working. You don't have to do any work. And the other day I was at a corporate gig because, how do I say this nicely, right? Have you had that feeling when you go back to a gig after all of the things that have been going on and the very first or second gig that you've done, you can't remember anything?
Been there, bought that. The t-shirt.
I got there and I was like, okay, I rehearsed a bit at home again just to get myself back in the swing, but I can't remember the flow of how I got from one trick to another. Some of the things I said, I forgot, and everything. So I got out the experiment and I did that at one point because I was just, you know, when you have a brain freeze and you think, oh, what can I do next? What am I going to do next? I did this. And it blew them away. And for me, it's such an easy, simple trick. But for them, it absolutely slayed this corporate audience. I was like, who are we to say a little packet trick is not going to absolutely blow people away? It's about how much fun they have. So that's one of my favorites. Then blistering, because I carry it everywhere I go. And out of the blue, probably my favorite of our effects. But to be honest, I love them all, really, because they've all got something close to my heart.
I suppose if you didn't love them, you wouldn't have released.
Yeah. There's a couple of tricks that, you know, I've not released officially, but I only like releasing tricks that I really believe in, that I enjoy performing. And again, that comes down to what I do when I create a product. Or if I work with somebody, it's got to be a trick that I really enjoy. Another one, for instance, is tactical. That's one of my all-time favorite tricks. And that's one where you have a mini tic-tac box and you throw it, it turns into a full-size box. And it has a mini deck of cards going into a large deck. It's so easy to perform. It blows people away. And you get two gimmicks in a pack. But I do that all my corporate walk around. It's amazing.
There you go.
So try not to just plug my own products. I'm trying to be honest. You know, it's one of those things.
Well, as you know,
this one at the moment, I'm learning ABC. That's going to be on the next review show. I think, did you do one on this recently?
I haven't done a review on it yet, but it's coming soon.
Yeah, me too. I was playing around with the cars, really impressed with them so far as well, the bicycle and all that. But that's my next thing. And was it Switcher 2 I saw you do a review on the other day?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's right. Great. I love Switcher 2.
Not watched it yet, but I will watch it. But yeah, I hope to do Switcher one on 2. That.
I love Switcher 2. It's really, really good.
And my favourite book at the moment, just so I'll share it with people, is this one here. Pepe Carroll, 52 Lovers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Spanish magician. And his classic card magic is absolutely to die for. But I think I got this because I saw Danny Doherty do one of the tricks in his own version. And I asked him, where can I learn this from? And he said, get this book. So that's my favourite book.
I haven't seen that book, so I'm going to go and order that as soon as
I've got it. Well worth it.
Wow. That's cool. Well, let me ask you one last question, James. Sure. Final question, which is, what's next, my friend? I mean, you've done so much. You know, we've talked about all the different things that you've done, ice skating, hypnotherapy, stage magic, illusions, hypnotism. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. What is it? What's next? Is there anything left on your magical bucket list that you haven't yet achieved that you would like to achieve?
Definitely. This is going to be within 5 years because I'm not going to do it immediately. I've not got enough time. Penn and Teller Fool Us, I'd like to go on that. Simple as.
Okay.
Britain's Got Talent, I'd like to go on that again. I did go on it once, but as a double act, as an illusionist, I'd like to go on and do something myself with that. Okay. But for the moment, it is building up the printing business, continuing the magic shop and building up the magic world. And I don't think I'm freeing up my time. That's what I want to do next. Just free up my time. Enjoy the weekends. Go out for more walks instead of constantly working. So for me, just being able to free up my time and enjoy learning a new trick rather than having to learn it because I have to review it or having to focus on a trick that I'm selling or to understand it better. I want to do it for myself. Maybe a bit selfish, but I think we've got to be sometimes.
I completely agree. I completely agree. And that's a very good goal. 100%.
I think freeing up time. That's the thing. I think one of my big goals is also to make as much money as I can in the littlest amount of work possible.
Yeah.
And why not? I mean, but at the same time, do it well.
Yeah. So. Work smart, not hard.
Exactly. Exactly. Absolutely. You know all about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest piece of advice that anybody could get from this whole interview. Work smart, not hard. Absolutely. Yes. Don't be a busy fool and all those buzzwords.
Exactly.
And you know what? This has been an incredible interview. And I really hope that anybody who's watched this will support you. They can get on your mailing list, right?
I was going to say, I mean, I only just thought about this a few minutes ago. Would it be great to offer everyone who watches this a discount on both Print by Magic and Magic World?
I think they would love that. 100%. Right.
So what I'll do is I won't say the code now, but I'll give you a code that if it's possible, you could post with the video and both
websites. I'll put it in the description down below and I'll put it up on the screen. So when we edit it, it's flashing up on the screen right now. That's the code and it'll be down in the description and that'll give you a discount, right?
Fantastic. It's only fair.
And you know what? I really highly recommend your company. I know we've talked about this off camera. I'm doing a review show special on Magic World very soon. That'll be dropping in the next couple of weeks. But you know, if you want to support James, go check out the website. The link's going to be in the description down below. Also, go check out Print by Magic. If you've got a crazy idea for a card gimmick, James can print it to you and make it. You know what? You can have your business. Imagine having your business cards on a playing card. Imagine having a deck of double blank backed cards, and somebody signs a card on the face, and the back changes into a playing card. Changes from a playing card into a business card.
One of the big ones at the moment is that I've got loads of magicians who are doing weddings all over because they're going crazy right now. And they upsell a deck of cards printed with their image on the back, maybe a date as well. So they send me the image or a logo for the corporate company. We print out the deck. We can print out custom boxes as well. And they're selling them for, we might sell a deck of cards for £22. They're selling them for £40 to the actual end user. And it's win-win for all of us. So, but that's been a very big thing, is upsells to your clients.
And, you know, that's the sort of thing that a bride and groom at a wedding would love to do. Yeah. You know, would you like every single person that comes to your wedding to have a souvenir deck of cards to take away with them? Oh, my gosh, what a great idea. That's awesome. That's awesome. So there you go. There's so many things that you can do by visiting Print by Magic. And you are an inspiration. You do so much. You work so hard. And you've always been successful at everything you've done. And I know whatever goals you have in the future, you will hit them and you will continue to hit them because you're just one of those people. You're one of those people that
I hope so. And you too with yours.
Oh, thank you, mate. Thank you. So what I want everyone to do is leave a comment down below. I'm sure James will see it. If you haven't already, go subscribe to the Magic World YouTube channel because James's YouTube channel is popping. There's a lot of great reviews on there. Support everything that this man does and look out for him because apparently in the next few years, you're going to see him on BGT and Fool Us. So that's going to be
maybe not in the same 5 years, maybe 5 years for one, 5 years for another.
Absolutely. Well, I'll be looking out for you, my friend. And one more time, thank you so much for coming on the channel. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
We'll get that review show special done very, very soon because I want people to see just how amazing your stuff is.
Thank you so much for bringing me on. It's been a really good time. I've enjoyed it and I can't wait to see it live.
Awesome. Guys, thank you so much. On behalf of James and Magic World and myself, I'll see you again soon. Join us again. My name's Craig from Magic.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.